Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth and make fine art with needle and thread. No Christine this week. Actually, I'm doing this one solo. Really having a tough month here in October. I have to travel all the time this month, and each of these trips is taken up 3 nights, and our normal recording time is Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday night, when Christine and I are usually available to record, and it's just not worked out. I've got last week I was home, but the other weeks this month I'm on the road, and we've tried to record shows on the weekend, but one or the other of us is just not available, so it's just been a tough one. And I was just going to run an old one this Wednesday, but I'm sitting here in a hotel room and had some things to talk about. So I thought, well, I'll do a solo one this week. Probably not going to be very long, but a solo one. And then next Wednesday, again, we're not able to record, but I do have Arlene Cohen is going to join me. And so we'll talk with her next Wednesday, and she's doing some things on her end that are quite interesting. She's always doing something interesting. But we'll have Arlene next Wednesday, and then hopefully we'll get to the end of October and into November when I don't travel so much and Christine and I can get back together. But just trying to keep two podcasts a week going sometimes just with both of us and our schedules is just not easy. So doing the best we can, and you're stuck with me this week. So just the way it is. If you haven't done it yet, I really want to call your attention to last Sunday's podcast with Linda Eaton of Winterthur. What a tremendous conversation I had with Linda, talking about the new exhibition, Embroidery, The Thread of History, and learning how that an exhibition like that gets put together, and a little behind the scenes at Winterthur and their collection, and what she goes through as the curator to put those exhibitions together. And this weekend now coming up is the conference that goes with that exhibition. And have had several people have mentioned that they're going this weekend. Just today, or Tuesday, recording this on Tuesday, Kim Young from Sassy Jacks mentioned she was driving over to Delaware to attend that conference. So be anxious to hear what people experience at that. If you're a listener and you attend the conference, please let me know what it was like and what you learned. And it sure sounded like, from Linda, it sure sounded like it was jam-packed full of fun things to do and learn, and great speakers and projects, really great projects. You can see those on the website. And go to the store if you're interested in those kits. I think we kind of glossed over it in the podcast, but go to the store if you're interested in kits from the projects, the workshops that are offered this weekend. Those will be available at the store along with a book about the exhibition. And so for all of us who can't make it to Winterthur to see the actual exhibition, it's a way to at least experience some part of the of what they have to offer. And one of the highlights of the exhibition is a casket stitched by Janet Brandt. We talked about it in the podcast. Janet is in Indianapolis, and she took this casket and told the story of Little Red Riding Hood after she grew up and married the woodcutter, and stitched the casket, as you no doubt have seen on the website page, on the Fiber Talk page at wetalkfiber.com for the Sunday podcast. There's a link there that you can open up a very large photo of the casket, the exterior of the casket. And I encourage you to do that, because it is just, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. And then just a couple of days ago, I came across a video that Janet had done that shows the inside, what's inside that casket. And I can't decide if the exterior or the interior is the more amazing part. But on the page for the Sunday podcast with Linda Eaton, I'll put a link to that video, and you definitely want to watch that, because the pieces and parts that she has inside that casket are absolutely amazing. I've not seen a piece of needlework that quite matches this. I'm really amazed and impressed. So you want to check out that video and check out the large photo that we link to at WeTalkFiber.com to really experience this casket. And wow, really a huge, long, loud applause to Janet Brandt for what a tremendous accomplishment with this casket. So do check it out. It's definitely worth the time. And my wife, who does not have a lot of interest in needlework, I sent her a link while I'm traveling here, and I'm at a conference. I sent her a link to the casket before I left for my day of meetings and talks and so on and so forth. And I get an email during one of the conference sessions from her. Wow, she just said, "Wow, I can't believe this!" And so even she was shocked and amazed. It's really worth checking out. What I'm working on, when I'm home, when I have time, and lately that's been tough, I'm back to Sarah Brazier. I'm really pounding away on that, trying to get some of the basic framework done so I can start to stitch some of the motifs. Got to get some of that framework in so that I can have reference points. And so making some progress there. Should be able this weekend to stitch some motifs and start to use some different colors. Which will be nice. And if you're at all interested in samplers, go to the Sarah Brazier Stitch Along page, because several people have finished the sampler already, which I don't even know how you I'm so jealous that you have that kind of time. But they're just some absolutely stunning finished pieces to see what people use for thread and what they used for ground cloth is really impressive. So do check that out. If you're at all interested in samplers, you'll see some pretty amazing stuff. And so that's on Facebook at the Sarah Brazier Stitch Along. And then I mentioned a couple 3 weeks ago about having traveled to Europe, to Frankfurt, Germany, with needlework. And took along a needlepoint project, a Debbie Raleigh needlepoint project. But the main point of that was what you can get away with, and that isn't the right phrasing, but what I was able to take to Germany, and that's making a layover stop in Charlotte from O'Hare and on to Germany, and then Germany back to the return trip was to Dallas. But anyway, basically getting my bag checked 4 different times. And what I took along with me, and I took stitching, lap stand, needles, scissors, and all the thread and stretcher bars and all the things that I needed, magnifier, light, the whole shoot and match, never got questioned once. Now, of course, your mileage may vary. I can't say this is a universal thing. And there are TSA checkpoints that people are kind of just touchy about it, but this is what I travel with. Is I take needles, I take a laying tool, but I take a wooden laying tool. I do not take my Jacobari, I think that's how you say it, metal laying tool, because that's just too much metal, too sharp, and so it's not worth the risk. But I know that on those X-ray machines, wood doesn't even show up. So I take a wooden laying tool. But the question that keeps coming up is the scissors. What do you take to cut thread? And I have a pair. I think I paid all of $7 for it. And most needlework shops I've seen have them. They're just a plastic colored handle. And I don't think the blades of the scissors are more than an inch and a half. And they run about $6 or $7. And they come with a plastic cap that goes over the blades that matches the handles. And that's what I take. And my thinking on that is I want real scissors with a sharp point and narrow, sharp blades to stitch with and to cut thread with. And I know some people take fingernail clippers, and there are other options. but I really want scissors. And so that I take those scissors, and my thinking is if they get confiscated, if I run into one of those TSA checkpoints where they're really, really tight, and they say, you can't take these scissors, the worst I'm out $6 or $7. And, you know, I can find some other cutting tool on the other end or, you know, work it out some way. But that way I have scissors. And if they're confiscated, you know, so what? I'll live with a $6 or $7 loss. There's no way on God's green earth I'll take my Dovo scissors, my $50 Dovo scissors. Those are not leaving the house. Not worth the risk, and I'm certainly not taking them through some checkpoint at an airport. That would just make me sick to lose those. But $6 or $7, I'm worth it. It's worth risking. And I travel all over the country. I mean, I'm in all kinds of airports. This week I'm in Galveston, and getting to Galveston means I flew to Dallas, then Houston. So I got my bag checked twice there, and that'll be the same thing going home. Nobody even flinches. I don't even get hand checked. Those little scissors go right through without any trouble at all, and I do nothing to hide them. They're right in my carry-on backpack with my laptop and you know, all my microphone and all my cords and stuff. They're right in there with the needles and the whole shooting match. I don't put them in my suitcase or anything. They're just there, and I even watch the guy at O'Hare when I was leaving for this trip. I just watched just to see if he spent extra time with my backpack that had the scissors in it. No time more than he spent on my suitcase, which was just clothes. So, again, your mileage may vary. You know, the minute I say this, somebody will say they got stopped and lost their $7 scissors. But that's been my experience, and I just really wouldn't worry about it if I were traveling. If you take scissors, that's all you've invested, and that's all you're out in terms of money, fairly easily replaced. But just haven't been questioned, and I have to say, when I was in Frankfurt in Germany coming home, I figured I'd lose them. I was warned that by several people that they were pretty strict there in Frankfurt about what went through, and they were very careful. I'll tell you, the scrutiny was very high in Germany, but never even questioned me, never hand-checked the bags. So I'm pretty comfortable recommending that you buy those cheap little scissors and take those with you, and then you'll have an actual pair of scissors to stitch with on the plane and wherever your destination is, and probably not have any trouble. And others have mentioned that that's the scissors they use, but pretty comfortable with that. So that's just kind of a long-winded way of saying, if you're going to travel with scissors on an airplane and are concerned about it, buy a cheap pair like that from your needlework store, and you'll probably be okay. Probably be just fine. There was a post that Mary Corbett with one T put up here. Oh, it was the 5th of October. As I look at the thing, and I'll have a link for it. Where she offered 5 embroidery tips for better results and easier stitching. And as beginner stuff, but Mary is dead on to mention this stuff, and she's covered this 100 times on her blog, probably 1,000 times, all these things, but never hurts to bring these back. These beginner things for those of us who forget, and you know, there's always new people coming into the hobby, and you go through any of the Facebook groups, and there's always questions from beginners, and people are always kind enough to help them and offer helpful answers, and be positive about it, not make fun of them because they don't know. And it's just one of the best things about those groups is people are always jumping in to help with good, solid information. But they're just always beginners. And the more that those of us who have stitched more in a couple of days can help these beginners out, the more we encourage the stitching hobby in general, and bring these new people along, whether they're young or old. but it just brings them along and makes their helps them get going, get off on the right foot, and have success and enjoy this hobby that that all of us get so much pleasure out of. But Mary had this thing, five tips, entry level things, and one of the things that she did talked about once again, probably time number 3002, about which end of the skein to pull from a DMC skein. And as she describes it, the end with the long label that has the color number, the end that is there is the one you pull. And you can keep them, I don't do it, but you can keep the skein right within the paper wrappings. And if you pull from that end, it'll stay all together and it won't get tangled. Pull from the other end, pull the wrong end, and pull very far, and you'll have a knotted mess that is a real nice challenge to get all sorted out. She just shows how to do that, explains how to do that. I put all of my DMC on bobbins. I just prefer it that way. So I take the paper wrappings off, and then open that thing up so it's a circle. The skein is a circle, and then I take the correct end, the one that comes out from the end of the long label in the skein, and then I use that to start my bobbin wrapping. I just prefer the bobbins, and people talk about wrapping, and you get a crease in the thread, and my answer to that is don't wrap so tight. I wrap fairly loose around bobbins. I use the plastic ones, not the paper ones. I don't think they hold up as well. I use the plastic ones, and I just wrap loose, and I don't get creases. And they take up a little more space in the box because it's bulkier, but I don't have creases in the thread, and it works out just fine with me. But Mary takes through that. And then the other thing was stripping. Another tip she had was stripping the embroidery floss, and it was interesting. I do it the way she does it, which is to cut off your length, however long you want it to be, and then tap the end, and then hold the main thread and pull one of the strands straight out, and then it'll kind of bunch up. The rest of it'll kind of bunch up underneath your hand. But when you pull that thread out, it'll just drop right back down and won't be tangled. And I bring that up because I've seen videos of people stripping multi-stranded thread and tapping the end and then grabbing one of the strands and pulling to the side. And they get away with it. But I've tried that, and more often than I care for, I've had that end up in a tangled mess. And so I watch those videos when I see them, and I'm kind of surprised that they pull to the side and get away with it. They wouldn't show it on the video if it tangled up. But I think you have better results all the time if you pull straight up, like Mary Corbett shows you, and many others show too. Just pull straight up and separate those, strip the six things out. That way. And I've been using on Sarah Brazier, I have been really taking advantage. I forget now who it was that suggested taking, if you're using, going to use one color quite a bit, taking multiple needles and threading them up. So separating out in the case of the Sarah Brazier, I'm using silk. So I take, I think it's seven needles, seven strands, and threading all seven needles at once with the same color. Because the border on Sarah Brazier is all the main lines of the border are all one color, and I think has been a real plus and a time saver. I mean, I'm not saving hours, but it's just been a plus. So I cut a piece of felt, and then I just load up seven needles with the thread and put them in the felt as a place to hold them. And then as I finish one, I just pull out the next one, anchor it, and go. And I think that's a real good tip if you're going to use the same color a lot. And in Sarah Brazier, I forget what the color is, something 45, gets used a lot. And so I'm just going to keep needles loaded with that color on that felt to use throughout the sampler. And I really have found that to be a very helpful tip to do that. So I've been doing that and making it work very well for me. And then Mary also talked about, and this is, I find this an interesting study, and that's choosing the right needle size. And she talks about the needle should be able to pull the thread, including the doubled thread near the eye, through the fabric fairly easily without allowing too much abrasion on the thread as it passes through the fabric. She says the rule of thumb she always heard growing up is the shaft of the needle should be about as thick as the embroidery thread. But the only situations where this really works are in counted techniques, needlepoint, stitching on open weaves, and other time there's already enough space for the fabric threads for the needle to pass through easily. For surface embroidery, you have to consider not only the thickness of the thread, but also the thickness of the thread at the eye of the needle where it's doubled, and the weave of the fabric. And so she talks about that there's not one needle for everything. And she says you may hear a pop as the needle passes through the fabric. Usually that's as evident of very taut fabrics, there should be no real resistance, and that the needle should make a hole big enough for the thread, but not any bigger. And then talks about as the thread is passing through, if you get a loud zipper noise, then you don't have a big enough needle. And if you feel any resistance, you don't have a big enough needle. And, of course, those two things, that's going to wear the thread. That's what you want to avoid, is you want that hole big enough that the thread isn't going to get worn, so that 10 stitches in, your thread is starting to fray. So watch that needle. I tend to have on my needle minder, no matter what I'm stitching, I tend to have three or four, sometimes five different needle sizes that I'll use for different threads, even though the canvas size is the same. I'll use for different threads, just depending on what it is. Maybe overkill, maybe able to just use a size 22 and be done with it. But I will adjust needle size for different threads, and I'm no expert, but I found it works well for me. So she does go on a bit in this post about threads, and then she has another thing about beginning and ending threads, and this has been a really fun study for me. Is this whole practice of beginning and ending threads, because it used to be, for me, that was the most irritating part of stitching, was beginning and ending threads. And now I've kind of flipped over in that I've discovered so many different ways of beginning and ending threads that now it's been kind of a challenge. What's the best way that's going to give me a good anchor? How many times, what ways can I use it so that I don't have to turn the canvas over to anchor. Really been working hard at learning to make effective pin stitches so they can't be seen. And anytime that I do a pin stitch or that I have an opportunity, I'm doing a pin stitch no matter what I'm stitching. Really am working at that to develop that skill and to recognize how best to do that so that I don't have to turn it over. Turn over the canvas, and it's become now my biggest irritant. It's become my most fun challenge, is to learn and try to figure out what's the best way to anchor all the different kinds of threads. And some of those slippery ones, Bargello hook's about the only way to do it. And sometimes I think it takes a double hook just to make sure those things are anchored well. And then really I've been working on anchoring it on both ends so that it's not obvious, because it's a little tighter or a little looser, it's not obvious where a thread ended, and anchoring so I'm not covering up a hole, trying to be able to hold up particularly needlepoint canvas to the light and see open holes everywhere where they're supposed to be. So it's become a real challenge for me just to try and work that all out, and been having a lot of fun with it. But Mary has a thing about on her blog about beginning and ending threads, and you can go to Vanna Twisted Stitcher. She has a pin stitch advice, and then there's a real nice video, at Hands Across the Sea Samplers, where Nicola shows how she does the pin stitch very effectively, does a pin stitch with the, you know, linen. And she does, I don't think she turns over her canvas at all, or her linen at all, her project at all to anchor anything. I think she does it just about all with pin stitches from the front, and you can't tell. And so it's really, especially if you're stitching on linen, really would be worth your time to go to Vonna's site and then go to Hands Across the Sea Sampler and look at those videos to see how the pin stitch is done, because done on linen and done right, it can save you a lot of time and hassle and allow you to stitch all of it from the front without it being seen. So that's definitely worth the time. But that I'll link to Mary Corbett's tips podcast, her tips blog post, 5 embroidery tips for better results and easier stitching. Just some helpful information. If you're a veteran, think you've been doing it a million times, you're confident you know what you're doing, never hurts to review. And if you're a beginner, it's a real good place to get some good solid information to make sure that you're off on the right foot. And if you're helping out a beginner, it's a good place to point them to. You know, that's something that people will often offer advice to beginners in the Facebook groups. And a lot of times you can just link to Mary Corbett's or other sites and say, hey, check this out. And there's a lot of videos anymore on YouTube that help people with stitching, how to make different stitches. Mary Corbett's got a truckload of videos on how to do various stitches. And, you know, point beginners to those, because that helps them, and it also gives something that they can refer to time and time again. So those beginner things, they can be brought up and reshared and reshared 1,000 times, and there's always somebody that is going to help. And or, you know, veterans who might pick up a new tip, never thought of doing it this way or that way, never heard of that. And so it's worth it. Share those things. That's about all I have. I also had a couple of people wondering about listening to the podcast. And I just say again, when it comes to Fiber Talk, WeTalkFiber.com, you can just go to the page for the podcast and click on the player. But for podcasts in general, including Fiber Talk, the best thing to do is use a podcast app. It really is. If you have an iPhone, one's built in for the Android phones. Stitcher seems to be one that people use, but there's a whole bunch of podcast players, apps, and you just load one up, and then if you just search for Fiber Talk, I'll use Fiber Talk as the example. Just search for Fiber Talk. We're on just about all of them, if not all of them, and it will come up. And you just hit the subscribe button. And when you do that, then every time there's a new podcast, it will show up in your phone or on your iPad automatically for you. So you don't have to do anything other than just check and see if there's a new one. And for us, every Wednesday and every Sunday, there's a new podcast. So it's just real easy to do. Now, the other option you have at Fiber Talk is at the end of every a podcast page is a way to sign up on our website, and then you'll get an email every time we post something new on the website, and 99% of the time the something new is a new podcast. So you can do that, then you'll get an email, and that is a link. But and this is what the vast majority of people do, is use the use an app to listen to the podcast. And then the other tip I'll offer is those podcast apps offer a way to, all of them, offer a way to download the podcast. And I highly recommend that rather than stream it, when you're at home and have Wi-Fi, download the podcast so that they're in your phone. And then when you're traveling on a plane, in a car, whatever, you don't have to use data. You don't have to use your provider data quantity limit, whatever, to stream. It's in your phone already, And then if you hit a bad surface area, a bad area where a service is bad, you won't lose connection. So it's right in your phone. And most cars anymore, you can connect your phone in one way or another, either a cord or by Bluetooth, and just play it in your car. And I know that's what I do with a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts when I'm driving. There's a podcast on in the car all the time, but I download all of them to my phone so that they aren't streaming while I'm driving. So that's just a tip. And there's a ton of podcasts out there. If you have interests other than stitching, there's probably 3 or 4 podcasts for you. So just reiterate that again, that's really the best way to listen to podcasts, Fiber Talk and others. And thanks to everyone for listening. Really, I've been getting a lot of compliments and comments lately and suggestions for guests. And I have a list. If you suggest a guest, I have a list, even if I don't respond to you. And getting them lined up. Several people have mentioned, could we get Trish Burr? Well, I have one scheduled. I have a show scheduled with Trish Burr here. Should be in the next couple weeks that we'll get to have a little podcast with Trish Burr, who is one of my favorite embroiderers from Cape Town, South Africa. And trishburr.com, that's some unique design work and needle painting work. So people who have suggested her, I finally got her to do a podcast. So I'm really excited about that. And working on the others, a lot of times it's just scheduling, but I try to get them all as people suggest them. I don't ignore you, even if you don't hear from me. Your suggestion goes on a list, and there are some people who just won't do it. You know, I've run into people who just say, nope, I can't do it. It makes me too nervous, or I'm not comfortable, or whatever, and we just have to move on. So some of your favorites I just can't get, but rest assured, I'm working at it. We're trying to get as many as we can. And there's a lot of people out there that Christine and I want to hear from. So you have good company in wanting to hear from these people. So we're setting those up. But for the people, and many people have suggested Trish Burr, finally was able to schedule with her. So that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. So Sunday we have Dana Bathel of Peacock and Fig. And that's an interesting story there. Dana Bathel, really had a great conversation with her. Peacock and Fig, I think it's peacockandfig.com, pretty sure. So that's an interesting story, and we had a great conversation with her. And then next Wednesday, Arlene will be with me because in place of Christine, and got a nice little list of things to talk with about Arlene, about design work and changing colors and designs and so on and so forth. So really always fun to talk with Arlene, and looking forward to that. So there you go. I got 30 minutes out of it. Hope it was helpful, and at the bare minimum, got you a fresh podcast on a Wednesday. So thanks for listening, and Dana Bathel on Sunday. And I'll be back with Arlene next Wednesday.